up.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I know we're in a different world now with all of the cancellations or delays of the sporting events, but I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to really miss the Indy 500 on Memorial Day weekend. Now, I'm glad they moved it to August. I'm glad it's going to still be running. I think it's one of the premier events in sports. I know some of you are not into auto racing, and some of you may not follow the sport particularly well. I have gone full-bore NASCAR, where I was covering it a lot for some stations I'd worked at in both New Hampshire and Las Vegas, where I was really into the community, and I was deep in, and I knew a lot of the drivers, and I knew a lot of the PR people. And then as I branched away from that, I still kept my interest in it, but it had faded. But ever since I was young, the Indianapolis 500, for whatever reason, has always been cool to me. I think the open wheel aspect of it is nice. We don't usually get to see a lot of that kind of racing. We're kind of more stock car oriented as a country, but the Indy 500 was always a big deal. And I always said, look, I can judge a particular popularity or notoriety of an athlete if people in my life that I know don't know anything about sports know who that individual is. And you could say that back in the day with AJ Foyt, with Bobby Rahal, with Mario Andretti. You could say the titans of open wheel racing that made their name in the Indianapolis 500 were household names back at a different time, in a different era. But it's still a pretty cool event. It's still one of those Memorial Day weekends. And I think a lot of it does have to do with its setting, right? Going into a Memorial Day weekend, 3 days, we're finally out of winter, really into the spring, getting ready to kick off the summer. This event's on TV. There's a bunch of balloons, bunch of pageantry that's going on. You know, Jim Nabors singing, you know, right before the race. There's a lot of stuff that goes on to lead that. But you also know that winning it, it puts you on a pedestal. It's on a different place in the world of racing. Now, I remember when they, you know, the split in open car racing and the Indianapolis 500 had a different feel, but it I'm going to miss it. Glad it's going to be in August. I'm glad they're still running it. A lot of races around the in that world have been canceled right outright. No rescheduling, but I'm glad they're at least keeping one of the premier events on the calendar. So it'll be busy, but well, at least we're getting some of those events.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM, as we continue along on a Friday. All right, so if you thought maybe Tom Brady had a little bit of pull to bring his good buddy Antonio Brown to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you're wrong. Bruce Arians was appearing on a show and said that in all likelihood, Brown coming to Tampa Bay is not going to happen kind of deal. He said there were three things that would prevent the Buccaneers from bringing aboard Antonio Brown if indeed he was available to be signed. There's no room, there's no money, and it's not a fit, no matter what. Now, you may be...
I thought you were going to go, there's no room, there's no money, there's no way.
No way. No room, no money, no way. All right, so here's the deal. Tom Brady played with Antonio Brown one time, 1 week. But we get the feeling like he liked having Antonio Brown on the roster. He liked the possibility that Antonio Brown being on the Patriots could bring, right? And so there was a rumor, with not Brady led by any means, but there was this, you know, we sort of connect dots and we come up with these thoughts that if Tom Brady was going to Tampa and the opportunity would come for Brady to have a little say in, hey, sign this guy or bring this guy aboard and, you know, be a minor part of this discussion, but a part of the discussion nonetheless, that he might be able to convince the brass to bring in a wide receiver like Antonio Brown. And I asked Pat Donovan about that last week, where I said, listen, what do you know this organization, you know Bruce Arians, you know the Glazers, like, what do you think about them as an organization? He didn't think that they would bring in Antonio Brown at all, and now Arians has confirmed this. Now, again, I don't know if Brady cares about this at all. I have no clue in the Brady household if this was something like, oh, man, I was really hoping that they'd bring Antonio Brown to the team. I really like throwing to him. Or he's like, I couldn't care less. I mean, they got Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. They're fine with me. I'm good with those two guys. I don't need Antonio Brown. I don't need the headache of that. I like playing him with the Patriots, but it didn't work out. And good for me. Good for me. Good for them. I don't care. But I don't know. But Bruce Arians nipped that in the bud pretty quickly. I'm glad he didn't give the, oh, no, we'll look into that. Because then you know Antonio Brown would go nuts.
Oh, of course.
He'd be on Twitter talking about it. He's already apologizing to everybody else. He's trying to do a mea culpa. He's trying
but has
to
he apologized
and,
to Bruce Arians yet?
Has he?
No.
No.
So that's part of the issue.
Has he apologized to the woman he made the threatening texts to? Remember
I
that?
Don't think so.
Has he sat down with her and said, you know, I lost my cool there for a second? You know, kind of implying I know where you live to some people. My bad. Did he do that? I don't think he has. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe he has. I don't know. I mean, that's the reason why the Patriots cut ties with him. So all of a sudden, these sexual harassment accusations started popping up. And the Pats were like, I don't need that headache. So Arians said
taking on the police. Didn't he do that, too?
Yeah, he did that, too, right? Arians says AB is not a fit. Good. So, but what if Mike Evans goes down with an injury? Right? What if Brady comes to you in week three and goes, this isn't what I kind of thought. I really could use a dynamic playmaker.
Not sure this is working out for us.
Yeah. Right? Do you change your mind then? My question is, how much of the Antonio Brown camp is Brady in? Like, is it 10%? Is it 90%? Because Antonio Brown, as a Steeler fan, let me tell you, he was one of my favorite players until he went crazy. And I told you this when it was going down in Pittsburgh. I never saw that coming. I had no warning that Antonio Brown would go from 0 to 210 miles an hour that fast.
No one did.
Right?
No one did. I mean, you know, I hate to make it like, you know, say it this way, but he almost came on like coronavirus.
Kind of like it, yeah, I guess
you know,
you're right.
You kind of saw little inklings here and there. Maybe it was showing up in the training camp in the most wild fashion. But you're like, that's kind of fun. He's got money to burn. Why not?
Exactly. But you still would go to the parade, right? You'd still go out.
Still check it out.
But then after a while, you're like, wait a minute. This guy's falling apart, and it's falling apart quickly. Every day is a new thing. Listen, remember, he went when he was with the Steelers at the end of the 2018 season. Right. The Steelers were like, he has to play. He's one of the most important members of this team. We are trying to make the postseason. He has got to play. It is extremely important that he's on this team. And then he had that mess with Mike Tomlin, and Tomlin told him to go home. And he thought that meant go home permanently. And he missed the last game of the year, a game they could have made the playoffs. They won that game and had Baker Mayfield. You know, had the comeback against Baltimore, they would have made the playoffs, and then everyone would be sitting down with Antonio Brown going, what the hell happened? Where were you? Like, we thought you were supposed to be on this at this game. And it went from that to being released, to being on the Raiders, to dealing with some sort of chiro foot problem, to being a mess, to being getting let go, and then bouncing around, and then making crazy statements, and then, I mean, just completely exploded. But here's the thing about this. We always say that talent will override some of your problems, but not all the time. And he's a perfect example of that. Because Antonio Brown, I think, if he gets himself back into shape, gets himself back into playing mode, and you were able to take away all of those distractions that he can bring, and you only thing you get from Antonio Brown is the talent, and that's it. Only the talent. He's one of the best wide receivers in the game.
Easily.
But the problem is that you deal with so much crap
So many headaches in the meantime.
So many.
During that all. Yeah.
So many. And so as good as he could have been for New England, by the way, think about this. You know, Brady never once said anything negative, like just, yeah, he's gone, fine. You never really knew how he felt. That's why people are connecting the two. So I'm sure he enjoyed having a playmaker, but I don't know how he felt about having a guy that sent threatening text messages to a woman who accused him of sexual harassment, where he was playing that power card. Like, I can't imagine Brady just goes, nah, it's no problem.
Yeah, that's fine.
You know, it's fine. I'm sure Brady's not like
that. Oh, that's just AB.
That's just AB being AB. You just got to learn to deal with him sometimes.
Either you love it or you hate it.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's like, no, the old man telling racist jokes is still telling racist jokes. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
The person that you don't excuse it because it's just him. Oh, that's grandpa. He comes from a different time. No, an offensive joke is an offensive joke. And that's what we're not seeing people take that stand with Antonio Brown saying, well, he does come with this baggage, but he's one of the most dynamic playmakers in the game. And, you know, you just got to understand sometimes he deals with things a little differently. The league was like, no. And the Patriots are like, nope. So I don't know how Brady feels about him, but I know how Bruce Arians feels about him because I hate to say it to him, but the Bucs do have some money, right? Breshad Perriman is gone due to free agency. There is some money. You could pay him a veteran minimum. You could pay him a little more than the veteran minimum. So it ain't money. Room? I don't know. If he just came with talent, you'd find room for him.
Oh, but, of course.
But fit? But that I think they
would.
More sense.
I think the Bucs would much rather go after Dez Bryant at this point, who's been like a year and a half to almost 2 years removed from the league. I would say that would probably be more appetizing because you know you have a guy who's going to work really hard for you and probably won't be as much of a headache.
Yeah.
I mean, he's had baggage, but.
I haven't checked on Dez in a long time since he got hurt when he went to the Saints. Is he posting? Do you know of any videos or. Let me show you what I can still do type of things.
I don't know if there's videos, but I do think that they, you know, he's still saying, hey, I'm out here.
He lasted 10 seconds with New Orleans. 10 seconds. So I don't know if he's still, if he's like, hey, I'm fine. Come check me out. I'm still good. I don't know.
You know what it reminds me of, honestly? Mm-hmm. There was an episode of Friends. Right? I'm dating myself now. But there was an episode of Friends where Monica was dating Jon Favreau, who was trying to be a UFC fighting champion.
Right.
Right? So he gets into the ring, and you know everyone's gathered in the girls' apartment watching the TV. And Monica's having a serious conversation with someone. I think it was Joey pops out and goes, fight started. And there's, you know, there's like, all right, we'll be right in. 30 seconds later, he goes, fight's over. And that, to me, every single time I think about Dez Bryant's career with the New Orleans Saints, that's what it was.
That's what I think about.
Like, Dez Bryant is signed. Nope, Dez Bryant's gone.
Gone. And whatever.
Just that. Remember, snap your fingers.
All the players were like, they were supporting him, and they were doing the X, and everything. They were like, we got you, Dez. Don't worry, we got you. Like, what Svengali mind trick did you play on the entire organization in the 10 minutes were with the team?
Didn't they pay him for the entire year,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, they were all in on him. They were supporting him. And players, I mean, publicly speaking, how great he was to have around. I was like, wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, the only thing I see is, you know, he retweeted Meek Mill the other day.
That's it?
Meek Mill said,
Dez is doing?
Meek Mill said, I need fire beats now. Dez Bryant responded, don't drop that heat. You let me hear at the Rock office.
Okay. All right. Good job, Dez.
So other than
I gotcha.
Oh, no. Okay. You know what? A day ago, he tweeted out, there's a little video. I know he's supposed to be inside, but hey, I'm trying to play football this year.
Good. Okay. So he is actively trying to showcase what he can do.
And if he's in Dallas, I know they're on lockdown. This is not social distancing, fellas.
Good. All right.
Guess we're okay with that.
He was going to join the Browns, wasn't it? Remember there was a conversation about him joining the Browns? Was that him?
I think so, yeah.
I think so. All right. Again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. All right, coming up, March Memories, one of the teams that won a championship, finally had their one shining moment, especially for this coach. That's coming up next on SB Nation AM. All right, it's SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Glad you can be with us as we continue along on a Friday. All right, so we've been doing this thing called March Memories every single day, and this week has been... And again, I was trying to look for the right terminology at the beginning of this week, and I think we kind of came up with one, kind of the one and done, in not in a negative setting, because that kind of has that connotation when we talk about guys who come to college basketball and then they leave immediately. These are more programs that had been building something, had pretty good years, but didn't quite cross the finish line. Maybe they didn't quite cross the finish line with different groups of kids, but eventually they did, and they finally got to the mountaintop, and they finally won a championship. We talked about Arizona this week. We talked about Syracuse this week. Yesterday, we didn't talk much about it. We talked about Michigan State and Indiana State in the 1979 NCAA championship, and then kind of touched on Mateen Cleaves and the Flintstones of the 2000 championship team that gave Tom Izzo their title. But today is another one of those teams where I felt like the coach was putting together something pretty good. He was finally got to the mountaintop, or he finally won one. And that's kind of been it for them. And that's the Maryland Terrapins of 2002. Maryland went 32-4 that year out of the ACC. And it's worth noting, out of the ACC that was the limited version of the ACC, the ACC light, if you will, that didn't include Louisville, that didn't include Syracuse, that didn't include the merger, that didn't even have Notre Dame in it at the time. Still just, that was probably 10 teams that were in the ACC. They went 15-1 during the regular season. In conference play. Their only loss was on the road at Cameron, but that was it. Everything else was a victory for them. So they went in as one of the hot teams in college basketball, but they did lose in the ACC tournament, and they lost in the second round to NC State. It would be a semifinal game for them as one of the top seeds, but they did lose to NC State. Now, look, we talk about this a lot. Sometimes it's not a bad thing to lose in your conference tournament. It's not the end of the world. There's no need to go crazy, because sometimes it's a reset button for your program, especially when you go through the entire conference slate at 15-1 like Maryland did. Maybe you need a little reminder. Maybe you'll need a little kick. Maybe just something that will set you off. And they entered the tournament as a number one seed out of the East, right? They were one of the premier teams of college basketball, and they showed it. They were led by players like Juan Dixon, one of their best shooting guards in the country, Steve Blake, who was one of the fantastic point guard, Lonnie Baxter, who was a second team All-SEC picks, Chris Wilcox, Brian Mouton. These were guys that were leading this Maryland Terrapin teams. We were head coached by Gary Williams. They ran through Siena and Wisconsin in the opening round, beat the Badgers by 30 points in Washington, then, which was basically a home game for them. Then they knocked off Kentucky. They took down Connecticut. Those were in the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. They went to the Final Four at the Georgia Dome in Atlanta, where they beat Kansas, who was the number two seed at the time, and the number two team in the country at the time. And then they beat an Indiana team that and won the national championship. And this Indiana team has its own story, because at the time it was under the head coach of Mike Davis, who had the unenviable task of taking over for Bobby Knight. If you know the story of Bobby Knight and how he was removed from the Indiana program, Knight was volatile. Everybody knows that. And Knight had a history of a temper. He was angry. But he did a couple of things that people would take the anger and they would excuse. One, sort of a feeling like, as a coach, that's the way you should have been, right? That's the way that you need to be tough on your players. That's how you get the best out of them. And Knight was doing it more out of love than any other thing. And you couldn't be a wuss if you're going to play for Knight in Indiana. And then there was a cultural change, and we started to see it a lot differently. And then, of course, there was the accusation that he choked Neil Reed. And then everyone was being interviewed for it, and nobody really wanted to talk about it, and everybody was a little nervous to say whether they saw that happen or not. Neil Reed said it happened. A couple of players said, yeah, I was there. It did happen. Finally, digging, you got a number of people to say that it did, but there was no evidence until evidence showed up. And then there was this videotape. And then you saw Coach Knight grabbing Neil Reed. So the university, Miles Brand, who was the president at the time, was contemplating what you're going to do with Bobby Knight, right? And then he comes to the conclusion that we're going to suspend him. We're going to give him a warning, right? So he puts his hands on the throat of a player, and they can't get rid of Bobby Knight because they know all hell's going to break loose. They give him a warning. They say, don't do anything like this again. Well, sure enough, he's walking through campus, and then a kid says, what's up, Knight? Knight takes offense to that kind of terminology used to him, rather instead of Coach Knight or Mr. Knight, they call him Knight. He apparently allegedly grabbed that student to accost him, and the university finally said, enough, and they let him go. And Knight, you know, was very vocal about being let go, didn't like being let go. There were tons of support for him, but Mike Davis has to take over the team, and Mike Davis leads them to the finals, which on April Fool's Day, they lose to Maryland, and Gary Williams gets the championship. I liked Gary Williams. He has got an amazing foul mouth. I mean, if you have little kids at Terrapin games, don't sit behind Gary Williams. I did sit behind Gary Williams at the first round and second round games in Denver in 2004. I sat with a couple of people in the media section and I could hear Gary Williams. It was nuts. It was nuts how he would curse, but I kind of knew that going in. But again, this is another one of those programs that has had, you know, that had some success and found themselves success, but couldn't cross the finish line and couldn't cross that barrier. I mean, this was a program that in the 1980s had Len Bias, who passed away in, you know, surprisingly right after the draft in 1986, was drafted by the Boston Celtics, who won the championship that year and was looked like they were going to be building a future. And they were never quite the same after that. Then they lost, you know, the Celtics lost Reggie Lewis too. But the Len Bias, I remember being in school, and I remember it was near summer. It was summertime, and a friend of mine called me at my house, and he was screaming that Len Bias had died. And that was, you know, that was part of basketball, the basketball history at Maryland. So Gary Williams finally gets his championship in 2002 when the Maryland Terrapins beat the Indiana Hoosiers for the championship at the Georgia Dome in Atlanta, again, completing the championship. So it's one of our March memories that we are doing this week. Next week, it should be really fun. Next week, we're going to find the better stories of college basketball, of the college basketball tournament. We may not be talking about champions. We may not be talking about teams that got it done, but they had legendary runs, runs that we still remember to this date. Some of them did finish up with a championship, but some of them had really cool stories. And some of them were, you know, were ones that we still talk about. We still process. And we still go, yeah, do you remember that team and that year and how fun that was to go on that ride with that particular program? And it may have ended in the championship game. It may have ended in the Elite Eight. Who knows? But they're still memorable. Because, listen, we don't have a tournament. And I think the NCAA tournament, I've said this for many, many years, all right? I don't think it's the best way to determine a champion, but it is certainly the most fun, without question. So I enjoy it, and I think there are things that can come out of a tournament like this that you don't get in other sports. You just don't. I think, especially on the professional level, because when you think about the professional level, when you talk about guys who are getting paid and their job is to win a championship, we don't remember a baseball team that poured it on late and then got to the playoffs and made a fun run to the ALCS. We don't tend to remember those teams. I was part of one. I mean, in terms of covering, I was part of the Rockies run in 2007. It was practically a miracle how they got to the playoffs. They had to win 14 of 15 games to close out the season just to get to a one-game playoff with the Padres. And then they won that, and then they swept the Phillies and swept the Diamondbacks and lost to the Red Sox in four games. I don't think very many people remember who was on that team. I don't think that's not a very memorable team, yet they did something pretty incredible. We don't do this with football teams. I mean, we talk about the Giants winning the Super Bowl because they were a six seed, but we've never talked about a six seed making a run to the AFC title game and remember them forever. We don't. But in this tournament, we do. Because in this tournament, we bring in everybody. What's fun about this tournament, and I know this is kind of a debate, but what makes the NCAA tournament kind of unique is it's not the 68 best teams in college basketball. There's all sorts of criteria for getting in, right? You could get in by just winning your conference tournament with a lousy regular season record,
We've seen teams do that before. You could lose your conference tournament game in the opening round and still get in because you have enough wins during the regular season. Right? You can, you know, you could be in the top 25. You could be outside the top 25. You could have a player get hurt and come back. We talked to Eric Musselman about that yesterday with his Arkansas team. So you have all sorts of these different teams that are in this melting pot of different teams, each getting into the tournament in some way, shape, or form. Conference champions, at-large bids, right? You know, teams that are surprisingly good, and they all come with the story. And sometimes you get teams that take advantage of those stories and make memorable runs, and yet they may come up short, but we remember them because those are the teams that we think about when we say things like, upsets are part of this tournament, or upsets are the reason why this tournament is so fun, because we still remember some of these teams and how fun they were to watch as they progress their way to the championship. You know, going back to Maryland, this was one of those championships that I felt good for a school and a team to take this, you know, to win it, to go to this, to play, to get to that level. I mean, he had been at Maryland since 1989, right? And he got there, and you're talking about a program that is just a couple of years removed from the death of Len Bias, right? And they're struggling, and he takes it over. And he gets them into the tournament. He got them into the NIT at first, and he got them into the tournament. And then all of a sudden, you win a championship after a nice long haul at that program. That's March Memories on SB Nation AM. It is SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. All right, not the good, the bad, and the dumb, but we keep rolling along on a Friday here on SB Nation Radio. We were talking about the 2002 Maryland basketball team winning the national championship. I was trying to remember who the coach was, a longtime coach, and it was Lefty Drizel, who was the coach a long time there in the 60s, 70s, 80s. He'd been a part of the legacy of college basketball there. When Gary Williams took over, he had the team in the Sweet 16 in 94, 95, 98, Yellow. 99, 2001, and then finally winning the championship in 2002. So there you go. It was quite a ride for the University of Maryland. And we'll continue that coming up next week with some of the better stories of the college basketball tournament, especially since we don't have one. Back into the NFL, as we talked about earlier, Roger Goodell issued a memo to all 32 teams and said, look, do not talk about this, but we are holding the draft. And we're holding the draft in April. And Ron and I were talking about this earlier, which is, look, when you have this draft and there's two ways you would oppose this if you were in the league. There are two reasons why you would oppose this. One is the practicality of it. Right. One is the, well, I like to have workouts and I like to have players come in and I like to have them train and I like to do physicals. And because we're all quarantined, we can't do any of that stuff. So it really hurts my due diligence. Look, the opening round, you probably have an idea of where your team is going to want to go. Second round, even more. But as you get into the later rounds, this is where you got to do some work. This is where you got to start evaluating guys against other guys. When I have the seventh pick of the fourth round, who am I going to take, and how do I separate the guys that I want from the guys that I could take but don't necessarily need? If I can't do the proper evaluation on that, this is going to hurt the way we draft. And if the draft is important, as the league does say, right, then you're not giving me the right tools to make sure I do it the best I possibly can. Okay, that's an argument. The other argument is optics. How is this look? How does it look when the NFL does business as usual, when the debate around the country is, when are we going to get back to business as usual? Right? It seems like everybody's screaming and hollering about whether or not are we all going to be going to church on Easter? Right? I mean, listen, I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know who to trust with that information. Who's going to tell me? Who is going to tell me everything is clear? Who's going to tell me I can go out? One of the struggles that I have with this, I'll tell you, I'm going to be honest with you. This sports not being on my calendar is something, for whatever reason, my brain has already processed. Like, yesterday I wasn't like, oh, I'll get to watch college basketball. I was like, I know there's no college basketball. I've had 2 weeks of no sports. I know there was no sports. I didn't even know it was opening day until Wednesday night when people were saying, oh, tomorrow's opening day. It was supposed to be opening day. For whatever reason, my brain has been able to process that. And maybe it's because that's what I do for a living, as I follow this stuff on a regular basis. So I'm always reminded that there's no sports all the time. But the one struggle that I've had with this quarantine is forgetting that I can't do things that I normally would do when I had free time. Right? It was only a couple of days ago where I was telling my son, hey, maybe we should go to a movie this weekend. You know, a couple of movies that him and I would like to see. We can't. It didn't dawn on me until after I said it that I went, oh yeah, we can't go to the movies. When my wife and I talk about, hey, you know what? We're all going to be, you know, Chris doesn't have to work and let's Friday night, let's go out to this. Oh, we can't go out for dinner. That's right. We have to get takeout. Totally forgot. We can't sit in a restaurant anymore. We can't drive to the mall. We can't do anything. If it's a nice day, we can't do this or that or the other thing. We can't go downtown. Those are the things I'm forgetting. Those are the things that I have to remind myself on a daily basis that I can't do some of those things. I'll give you, my wife does volunteer work for a food pantry in our town. And so she rodeoed me and my daughter into helping put together some food boxes yesterday. And so we went down there, and it's not a far drive from our house by any means. So we went there, and before we started, I said to my wife, I said, listen, I'm really thirsty. I got to go down to the gas station. I got to get a couple of drinks. You want something to drink? She goes, sure. And I left, and I was, as I was driving, I realized there was nobody driving. There was no cars. I pulled into the gas station. Nobody was pumping gas, and I didn't even know if the store was open. And then it hit me. It might be closed. It wasn't closed, but it hit me. It might be closed. And I was like, oh my God, I'm not processing this. But again, because on a nightly basis, I look for sports stories for this show and for some other projects that I do. So I'm always reminded that there's no games to talk about. But for whatever reason, I forget that my local convenience store might be closing at 6 o'clock. Or might be shut down for good, right? It's just hard to remember. The other day, I went into a hardware store, one of the chain hardware stores, to get light bulbs. We needed some light bulbs for our closet. We went in, and my wife forgot we were going to look at something for one of the living rooms. She says, "You know," so I said to the lady, "Hey, do you mind if we leave them here? Well, we just forgot we were going to go check to see something." She goes, sure, but we're closing in 5 minutes, just letting you know. And I said, oh, six. She goes, yeah, we're closing at six. And again, like a brick wall, I get reminded, oh, yeah, that's right. I'm totally forgetting about all this. So back to the draft, because it does go right back to the draft. So when you're talking about optics, when you're saying the country is figuring out when we get to go back to things, when the country is trying to decide when do we go back to normal, the NFL is providing some of us at least a favor because they're saying, you know what? We can do this. We're not holding it in Vegas in an irresponsible manner. We're not saying, screw the science, screw the doctors. We want our football party. They're not doing that. They're saying, look, it's just picking players. That's all we're doing. And you can do that in a room. You can do that with two or three people, and you can do it on conference calls. And I, as commissioner, can be in a room by myself. And all you have to do is tell me who that team is selecting, and I'll announce it. And because we can do this in a way where we don't have to have 20 people in a room, we don't have to have 5 people in a room, because it'll be still good talking points and it will give you something to look forward to and it'll remind you that we are still going to be operational at some point. We just don't know when, but at least this one thing can go on all right. In all of this chaos.
But question for you, do we want to do Adam Schefter's idea?
You got to give me Adam Schefter's idea.
Adam Schefter's idea was, hey, what, you know, since we're not doing a big old celebration of the draft, why not do 7 rounds in 7 days?
No, I don't think I don't like that idea at all.
What, you're not looking forward to the 7th round having its own day?
No, because that's dumb, because here's why it's dumb. I'm sorry, I love you, Adam Schefter, but the reason it's dumb is this. You guys on television fly through the last 2 rounds in 10 minutes. I mean, you ever watch the last, like, round 5 and 6 and 4 or 5? You ever watch that?
Do you feel he's taking advantage?
We're going to come back from the commercial break, and we've got the next 4 picks.
Do you think he's taking advantage of the fact, like, hey, this is my time to shine. There's no sports
There's
on.
There's no doubt.
This
no
is what
doubt.
I do.
Listen,
I speculate.
Listen, I love the enthusiasm of the deep football people, because I've been one of them, and I hang out, and my circle is people that are in the deep football. Like, you know, my friend Cecil Lammy is one of the smartest football guys I know. He's got tape on everybody. He goes to the Senior Bowl on his own dime sometimes. He goes to the Combine. He's really, really good at this stuff. And, you know, I did radio shows with him for years in Colorado. And I love Cecil, but I used to tell him all the time, I'm like, you're going down a road very, very few people go. Those sixth round picks, those fifth round picks, those seventh round picks. The average football fan just wants to get maybe round one and two, guys that they're familiar with. After that, they cook through this thing. But listen, I understand what he's doing. It is an idea, at least with nothing on, you might as well do it. And to be honest with you, I understand where he's coming from, because it does get tiring when all these networks are like, relive the classic NBA game in 1984, right? Like, all right, that's a good way to throw on a good 3-hour block of time or 2-hour block of time, but I need something relevant. I need something meaningful. Like, you know, these old games that you're showing are neat and they're nostalgic and they are passing some time. But if you can give me some news and some real meat, that's what I'm craving. So I guess Schefter's got a point. Why not do it that way? You would never do it. You would never do it.
You'd never have another opportunity.
But you're right. You're never going to have another opportunity.
You don't know if
absolutely right.
You don't know if, you know, spreading out the sixth round happens to be a gold mine watch.
So can I caveat, not caveat, can I postpone my judgment on that for a couple of days?
No.
It's
a dumb idea.
Can I revisit it down the road when I'm really, really bored and I've seen Tiger King 10 times?
Here's the other issue, right? The first round, you could probably do player interviews.
Probably could.
Because normally you know who those people are going to be. So you can set up a camera, you can set them up on Skype or whatever, and you can do a player interview from inside their house with family behind them. Sixth round, you don't know anybody.
No, you don't know anybody.
Is that going to give you enough time? Or are you just going to let everybody who entered the draft know, just be prepared. We might call you.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That puts a lot of work on Todd McShay and Mel Kiper.
Yeah.
Because now they're like, look, here's the deal. Instead of you brushing over these guys in like a 30-second bit where you just use cliches like, you know, Sam Jones, offensive tackle, Colorado School of Mines. And instead of going, he's obviously a good player, real big, sits at 6'6", 320 pounds, big guy, can clog up the middle, good tackler, good kid in the locker room, apparently smart because it's an engineering school. He's going to be a good pick for the Detroit Lions. Now you really have to tell me about him.
Yeah.
Now you really have to tell me about him. Yeah.
You got to have more than just the generic questions like, "Hey, are you excited to be insert NFL team here?"
So tell me what it's like to go from an engineering mining school to possibly playing in the National Football League. Well, it's just a great honor, a lot of hard work, and my coaches and people who believed in me, blah 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 blah. You going to get that for 3 hours? And the NFL is going to go, all right, Adam, here's the deal. We're stretching this puppy out. We're going to give you these picks one at a time. So you better enjoy it. We're not going to give you all like six. We're going to dump a bunch in your lap. We're going to tell the teams to slow down. We're going to stretch this puppy out every single day. Because if you're just going to put me on TV to do the fourth round, I'm going to make it last. I don't know. We'll see. It's a bad idea. I'm trying to put a spin on it, like lipstick on a pig. I think it's a terrible idea. But Ron, by the time we get to mid-April, I might be writing on the wall with crayon at that point with, I may be looking like Tom Hanks talking to a volleyball. So at that point, I might take 7 days.
Or you might be just come mad and just start drawing plays. And it's all wham.
My wife will be like, because my wife still has to go to work, like at a building, because she works in the medical field. So she doesn't have the same stir craziness that I do. But one day I'm going to go, honey, come here. Right? The quarterback, he runs like this, but then out of nowhere, he changes direction and goes this way. She's going to go, oh God, please give him something. Please give him something to watch. He's now drawing up plays on his little on his wall with a green crayon. That's going to be terrible. It is SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of SB Nation Radio presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Nice day today here in Nashville. Do I stay in? Do I go out and do yard work? Like finish, trimming the yard and making it look somewhat reasonable for the spring? Or do I watch the rest of Tiger King in the house?
I'm going to be in the same dilemma. Fortunately, it's a little overcast today and it's supposed to rain tomorrow.
There you go. Maybe watch it tomorrow.
Yeah, I know. So that might force me to go out today.
All right, so let me just tell you real quick. Everybody's been talking about the Tiger King miniseries on Netflix. All right, it's been popping on social media. Everyone's buzzing about it. Much like a couple of years ago, Making a Murderer. Remember that? And that got a lot of social media love. And everyone was like, you got to watch it. Next thing you know, it became a phenomenon. Tiger King down the same road. Everybody's talking about how great this is. But I watched the trailer, and I said, I don't know. It doesn't seem to be my thing. It seems weird, but I don't know. My sister said, no, watch it. You got to watch it. I said, all right. I said, I'll watch the first episode. Oh, my God. It's crazy.
And you and I, it was funny because you and I had made a pact yesterday. Not made a pact. It wasn't like we signed our name in blood.
Yeah, but after the show, we said.
But we said, yeah, we're probably going to take care. We'll probably watch it this weekend.
Right. Right.
And then, you know, we said it. We talked about it this morning before the show aired. And then we said, well, I think just subconsciously, we said, well, we're not going to bring it up yet because we got to bring it up when we've watched all the 7 episodes.
Right.
Because I think that's the only way to do this show justice is that you need to have seen it from beginning to end.
So know this, at some point Monday, we'll probably have a segment
it might
to talk
be
about
Monday
the craziness
show
of Tiger King. Now, if you'd like to participate in that and you're quarantined this weekend and maybe you've got some bad weather
and
you
probably
can't
are
do something, probably are, watch this. I've never seen, let me just make this clear, I'm not giving anything away. It is, you will watch this and say, okay, all of these people are actors.
Yeah,
this is a made-up story. There's no way these people are real.
Yet,
there's no way this scenario is real.
Yet there's no writer on the planet that could have thought this up.
Nobody could have created
this only problem.
In a screenplay session. So they are real people, and it's the craziest thing you'll ever see. Addiction is
guaranteed.
Guaranteed on Tiger King, SB Nation Radio.